I've got a tequila called Sparkle Donkey.
Nice.
Oh, I went high class, and I have this new whiskey that's kind of orange. It's called Ball Fire, I think. Ball of Fire. No, I think I'm saying that backwards.
Yeah, you might
Fireball.
Be.
This is Louis the 13th.
What is it?
This is a $1,500 bottle of whiskey.
Oh, how many dollars?
$1,500.
You're so full of shit, Fireball.
This is shitty, shitty, shitty rum, because that's all we have. Shitty, dirty-ass Bacardi dirt rum.
You're doing so, rum. Ooh, that's tough. You're tougher than me.
That's all I got.
Gentlemen, right. Cheers. Old.
Cheers.
L'chaim.
Why did we do that?
Hello and welcome to History Defeats Itself. My name is Kevin Rosenquist. I hope you're doing great wherever you may be, or at least better than John, who in our pregame shot did cheap rum and is paying the price. Thank you for the download, whether you're new to the show or a loyal Mistorian. We very much appreciate you. Please subscribe and review where and when you can. And joining me as always are my glorious cohorts and co-hosts. First out there in Los Angeles, California, it's John Banks. Sir, are you recovered?
I regret everything.
Everything?
I regret everything. Every moment of my life leading up to me doing that shot of Bacardi rum, I regret.
Because it led you there.
Yeah, exactly. And I would, you know what? I want to tell my mom to abort me. That's what I want to do.
Oh, wow. That went dark fast.
That's a huge insult to us, John.
I don't want my mom to abort you. I just want my mom to abort me.
Yeah, but we're both in love with you, and now you want to change who you are?
You're the reason I drank this rum. So
I'm not the reason you drank the rum.
How are you going to sleep at night?
Your terrible shopping habits are the reason why you drank that
That's
rum.
That's true.
It was
That's
also
true.
My idea, so I have to take part of the blame here.
Yeah, but you didn't stock his fucking pantry with garbage rum.
Apparently, he didn't stock his pantry either.
All we have is rum, because at parties, we go through everything. We haven't been to the store in a while to buy alcohol, so it's just all kinds of rum. Rum and gin.
Our parties,
That's all we got.
Our parties code word? Is that a code word for Wednesdays?
Yeah. I mean, just weekdays in general.
So. We drink all the alcohol every day.
That other sultry voice you're hearing is our good pal, Greg Mitchell. How are you, sir?
I'm feeling really pally. How are you?
I'm good. I can't complain. You know, things are good. Things are good. I mean,
wonderful.
Well, things are absolute shit in the world, but, you know, whatever. We don't talk about that on this podcast.
No. Well, sometimes we do.
Actually, we do most of the time.
Yeah. Oh, you don't know what my subject is yet, do you?
That is true. Yeah. We do
no,
not
get into
part of the show, John. We don't know what the topic is.
We're getting into shitty stuff, let me tell you.
Okay, good.
Well, as John just pointed out, on each episode of History Defeats Itself, one of us will pick the topic and do the research, while the other two don't do shit. They don't even know what we're going to talk about until it's revealed here during our recording session. And always remember that we are a comedy podcast. And while we do put time into our research, we're not actually historians. And we will more than likely get some shit wrong. But if you do take issue with anything you hear today or have comments about the episode, we would love to hear from you. So send us an email at historydefeatsitself@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. And a quick shout out to our good friends at the Sonar Network. It's a podcast network from our northern neighbors in Canada, or the motherland, as Greg calls it.
I do, but I heard they're based in Toronto, and Toronto is like the ego of Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it like the New York? Is that?
Wait, I thought Montreal was the ego of Canada.
No, that's the multicultural cosmopolitan mecca of Canada.
Didn't Montreal want to like be its own country?
No, it wasn't Montreal. It was all of Quebec. Quebec wanted to separate. Let's not get into that though, because that's going to get ugly fast.
I've heard that Montreal people are a little smug.
You've heard right. Some of them are.
They're like New Yorkers. So
No, I don't know.
I like
they're
New
not
Yorkers,
at all so. Like New Yorkers. No.
Well, the Sonar Network is a comedy and arts podcast network based out of Canada.
What kind of art?
But with a global fan base.
Pottery, ceramic,
mostly finger painting.
Aside from comedy, they also feature cool interview, audio fiction, and storytelling podcasts. Everything from the funny to the fascinating. They have a lot of great shows. I've listened to many of them. I'm a big fan. It's also a great time for Canadian comedy, huh? I mean, Schitt's Creek pretty much owned the Emmys this year. I don't know if you guys heard
that. That show is so funny.
It's such a great show.
And it's also a great time to let three podcasters from History Defeats Itself move to Canada and live there forever.
Well, I have been negotiating some couch space with some of the people from Sonar Network because we're going to need it.
Yes.
Good news, bad news. You're both going to have to marry me so we can get up there legally.
I am 100% on board with that.
Okay.
Even if we stay.
Let me get down on a knee. This is a very special, on a very special episode of History Defeats Itself. Kevin and John, will you have me and one another to be your lawfully wedded
husbands?
History defeating loving partners.
I believe that's called a group marriage. I believe that's what we're, so it's, are we marrying just you or like all of us as like three couples getting married?
Well, you know what? I actually have the power in this dynamic because I'm the Canadian.
Because I feel like first we should probably talk to our significant others because they may not be okay with it.
Completely unnecessary.
Yeah, I would say what they don't know can't hurt them. You know.
Yeah, that's true. You know, sexism alive and well.
How's that sexism?
Speaking of
we're
sex,
trying to commit to each other.
I think that's what we should focus on. Let's talk about the sex in this scenario.
Well, I mean, it's going to be me, you, and Greg in awkward entanglements.
Yes, there's going to be a lot of awkwardness.
Because Sheena and Jen and Courtney will want nothing to do with us.
No, so. They will not.
Why don't we just start by playing Twister, and that'll get us warmed up.
That will get us warmed up and in the mood.
We'll turn off all the ceiling fans, put the air conditioner on 80, and see what happens.
That's hot.
On 80?
Why do you want it so hot? How do you have to set the air conditioning at 80?
I don't think you need to set the air conditioner if you want it at
80. That.
You don't want to kick it. I'm just saying you want to make sure the air conditioner doesn't come on because you want it hot and steamy. You never been involved in a three-dude orgy?
It's
obviously
way
not.
Too early for us to go this far off the rails. If you get a chance, check out the Sonar Network. Check out all the great podcasts. It's a great comedy network. TheSonarNetwork.com. Tonight, it is John's turn to lead the crew. So, John, if you're ready, let's do it.
I am ready. I am. Thank you. Thank you so much, gentlemen. Greg has been vulnerable and opened up about anxiety on one of our episodes. And
every time John thinks about opening up on something, he's got to lead with the fact that I've been vulnerable. One time I was vulnerable,
John. I know,
because
it was so amazing to watch it happen. And I didn't see it. I never saw it before, and I will never see it again. So I just want to talk about that one time. And Kevin, last week, opened up about being a degenerate gambler. So that was very sweet and touching.
He did.
And tonight.
I'm not sure that's the message.
Is that not what the podcast was about?
Oh. John's episode is how John misinterprets every situation.
So tonight, I am coming out with the permission of my partner, and we are going to talk about, well, we've talked about sex, we've talked about dating, so tonight we're going to talk about relationships, and specifically we're going to get into polyamory, which me and my partner are actually polyamorous.
I'm disappointed because you led this off with, I'm coming out, and I was like... Whoa. Yeah. Talk about a very special History Defeats Itself. I mean,
I literally just proposed to him.
I know.
And he can't
it
even
was
come
so
out.
Funny.
You know, he
it
took that seriously, right?
Yeah. So.
All right, John. All right. I'm excited to learn more about this.
So in order to go with the theme of our show, we're going to talk about marriage, and we're going to get into polyamory. So we're going to be talking about basically relationships in general, right? And we will get into polyamory. So. Marriage can be recognized by a state, an organization, a religious authority, a tribal group, a local community, or peers.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but since you said, well, that's part of the show.
Because if you didn't mean to do it, you just wouldn't have done it.
That's true.
So,
he totally meant it.
That marriage is like something about a state, is it a state of misery?
Well, it could be. No, I said it can be recognized by a state. I mean, it could be a state of misery. It could be a state of joy. Yes, it could be many different things. But in this instance, the state would be the man.
California.
It could be recognized by the man.
All right. I apologize for interrupting. No, I'll never do that again.
Like the man in the relationship?
No. Just like, you know, like the man, like the, you know, the repressor, you know?
Ah, okay.
Keeping you down.
The same guy that has the don't tread on me flag that's also a cop and he steps on your fucking rights, that guy? Like, because he's right across the street.
Yeah.
I can see him from here.
Fucker. Yes. Like the guy with the big Trump sign on his house.
He's got the Trump train flag up right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, those Trump trainers, they love their trains. When a marriage is carried out by a government institution, it is a civil marriage. And when a marriage is performed with religious content, it is a religious marriage, which is pretty fucking self-explanatory. So I don't know why I needed to tell you that. So
I'm trying to think about what kind of marriage I had, because I didn't have a civil marriage nor a religious marriage.
Did you not do that? You didn't wedding. Step on the glass and all that?
I did. I mean, there were religious, like, it wasn't like, we weren't married by a rabbi or any kind of religious figure. We were married by a friend.
Right, but your marriage is recognized legally by the state. So you had then you would have had a state marriage.
Okay, but you said civil or religious, and I don't quite like a civil one. I assume is just something like where you go to the courthouse and you cry a lot and you
a civil marriage is any marriage that's not religious.
The civil one. Greg was assuming it was the one where you go down to the courthouse with your pregnant wife. And go, we got to get fucking married now.
Well, I got to get hitched on account of the condom broke.
Because her dad owns a shotgun.
Her dad is waiting in the car and he is pissed.
Civil in this case, meaning like government.
Okay.
The history, in The History of Human Marriage, written in 1891 by Edvard Westermarck, defined marriage as,
nice. And good this accent. Is my... I like it.
Favorite fucking definition ever, a more or less durable connection between male and female lasting beyond the mere act of propagation till after the birth of the offspring. Isn't that romantic?
Good God.
It really is. Yeah.
What year did you say it was? 18?
This was in 1891.
1891?
Yes. After he wrote that book, he drowned his children in a bathtub because that's how cold. He didn't. Yeah, that's not true.
Oh, Jesus. I thought you were serious. I was like, what the fuck?
So in 1936, he wrote In the Future of Marriage in Western Civilization. He then rejected his earlier definition. And now, or in 1936, defined it as a relation of one or more men to one or more women that is recognized by custom or law.
One or more women.
Yeah, I know. Well, it was like really funny because as I was doing this research, it's like that definition of marriage, like there's many definitions of marriage depending on culture, but a lot of them would say, you know, more or one or more. So I was just like, oh, right. Because technically, you know, there's polygamy. There are what is called group marriages, where we were joking about all of us getting married. There's like group marriages where like couples will all join together. So there's a lot of different types of marriage.
What's it called when you marry a tree?
Arbor marriage?
You're an arborist?
Yeah.
I feel like I need to call Jennifer up here so that way she can sit in and we can just completely discuss.
Workshop some ideas.
Yeah, we need to workshop some ideas.
Yeah,
about opening up your marriage or about like marrying other couples. Or I'm really confused. Like,
I mean, the
six of us need a workshop, or just
I feel like we just need to get some things on the table because we're a very traditional couple and we're just kind of monogamous. And I just want to know.
Did you just say we're just kind of monogamous?
I said it a little bit more succinctly than that, but
you did say kinda.
Well, I didn't. I mean, you're emphasizing on the wrong word.
I mean, that's a key word in that sense. I mean, come on.
It really is. That is a very important
that
adjective.
That is a super important word, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're monogamous.
That's even more
and
succinct,
now it's very magnanimous of you to say that we're... Okay, well, never mind. And let me get her over here.
John, when we were talking about all getting married earlier, you must have been like, this is going to be great.
Yeah. No, it's well. Just wait, because it's even going to get better when
awesome.
I get to. Yeah.
Well, hey, we can learn about how we can make this happen.
And we can. I mean, not in any country that exists now, but we can create our own country. Edmund Leach suggested that marriage be viewed in terms of the different types of rights it serves to establish. In a 1955 article in Man, M A N. Today,
that's a magazine.
Yeah, well, it was in a magazine. Today, it is known as the Journal of the Royal Anthropological Institute. Leach argued that no one definition of marriage applied to all cultures. He offered a list of 10 rights associated with marriage. Those rights, according to Leach, included to establish a legal father of a woman's children, to establish a legal mother of a man's children, to give the husband a monopoly in the wife's sexuality, to give the wife a monopoly in the husband's sexuality. And they keep going, and so it's like for everything that's for a man, it's for a woman, so I'll start skipping. So to give the husband or wife partial or monopolistic rights to the husband or wife's domestic and or other labor services, to give the husband or wife partial or total control over property belonging or potentially accruing to the wife or husband, to establish a joint fund of property, a partnership for the benefit of the children of the marriage, and to establish a socially... Sorry, this is so funny to me. To establish a socially significant relationship of affinity between the husband and his wife's brothers. So, what? So monogamy is a form of marriage in which an individual has only one spouse during their lifetime or at any one time, meaning if they get divorced, which is also known as like serial monogamy, which I think is what Kevin is. I think you're a serial monogamist.
It's kind of like my marriage.
I've only been married once.
Right. No. It's not. You've only been married once, but your relationships I won't say all, but from what I understand,
they don't overlap.
What you've told us, right. All your relationships are long-term monogamous relationships.
Oh. Well, not, yeah, so. I mean.
And you jump from one to another, never giving yourself a break in a sense of desperation because you don't know how to be alone.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more of a lack of. I mean, you know what? Let's just move on. I think it's best to move on.
Polygamy is a marriage which includes more than two spouses. When a man is married to more than one wife at a time, their relationship is called polygyny, and there is no marriage bond between the wives. And when a woman is married to more than one husband at a time, it is called polyandry, and there is no marriage bond between the husbands. So do you guys understand what that means?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like Eskimo brothers or Eskimo sisters.
Exactly. Are you an anthropologist? Oh, my God.
I don't know that's how it's supposed to be termed anymore.
The scientific terminology that you use, Greg Mitchell, is amazing. If a marriage includes multiple husbands and wives, it can be called group marriage. And see, and I wrote a joke in here where I said, Kevin and Greg, talk to your wives and let's make this love hexagon official in the eyes of the Lord. But you said the fucking joke before we even got into the topic and you didn't even know what it was, you motherfucker.
We totally ruined everything.
You ruined the episode. So that's it. I'm done.
So if the shot didn't ruin everything, this certainly did.
The shot ruined a lot.
What's it mean when you guys are in love with hating me?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Yeah, I don't know what you call it. Correct, right? It just feels right.
It does feel right. It does. It gives me the warm fuzzies.
My contributions to this episode are not going to be good.
I'm going to have to do a lot of editing just to save our marriages.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's going to start with, thank you for listening to History Repeats Itself. Thank you for listening.
There's going to be the official version and then the ones we send our wives.
A molecular genetic study of global human genetic diversity argue that sexual polygyny was typical of human reproductive patterns until the shift to sedentary farming communities approximately 10,000 to 5,000 years ago in Europe and Asia, and more recently in Africa and the Americas. So basically what they discovered was that there was men making multiple babies with many women until we got into farming. And then once we became more of a farming people, that's when monogamy started to come more into being. So, you know, because you're all on the farm, I guess, and, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to make kids. So,
yeah, that makes sense.
According to a LiveScience.com article published on June 26, 2013, in an interview with Stephanie Kuntz, the author of Marriage, A History, How Love Conquered Marriage, quote, what marriage had in common was that it really was not about the relationship between the man and the woman. It was a way of getting in-laws, of making alliances, and expanding the family labor force, end quote. Now, most Americans...
That would fit so well on a Hallmark card. will you please join me in creating this army of people to help us pick our corn?
Well, not an
army. It kind of sounds like Trump's vision for America, doesn't it?
I mean, but 7 out of those 10 babies are going to die before they reach 1 year old. three are going to die in childbirth. So it's really not going to be an army. It's just going to be like a small labor force.
Those were really depressing factoids there, John.
Well, I mean, that wasn't written there. That was just, you know, that was just a guess how shitty things were. So now most Americans see marriage as a bond between equals, and it has more to do with love and companionship than it does with labor force. So even though, Greg, you have three kids, so, I mean, that's, you're building a small little labor force right there.
I'm building the laziest labor force on the planet. They're wonderful, though.
I'm having one kid, so it's not a great labor force. We're going to be a very small business.
Yeah. You're going to be like a sole proprietorship. So
yeah.
So here's some different types of marriage. So there was arranged alliances, which was basically strategic alliances between families, or arranged marriages,
like kings and queens and stuff.
Exactly, or even like in caste systems and things like that. But in some cultures, parents even married one child to the spirit of a deceased child in order to strengthen familial bonds.
Wait.
Yeah.
Run that back.
In some cultures, people basically marry their living child to somebody's dead child.
To a ghost.
To a ghost, which we had an episode about.
We did, yeah.
How do you consummate that marriage?
I don't think that marriage gets consummated. Maybe it's all solo work.
It's masturbation. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah, it is.
And I mean, let's be honest. Who among us has not masturbated to ghosts?
Oh, I was just going to say I've married like a billion ghosts.
I've masturbated to ghost hunters, but that was for a different reason.
The show or actual hunters?
No. I'm sorry. The movie Ghostbusters.
Okay. Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Better. That makes sense at least.
Yeah. I mean, Slimer. Whew, God, so hot. So
Slimer
hot.
Got every... Wait, did you masturbate to the original one, like in the 80s? Or
yeah,
the one that
of course. No, oh, okay. No, the 80s.
No,
the
80s. No, that was the cartoon. The.
It really freaked my parents out on Saturday mornings. So. Then there are family ties, which is cousin marriages, remain common throughout the world, particularly in the Middle East. In fact, Rutgers anthropologist Robin Fox has estimated that the majority of all marriages throughout history were between first and second cousins.
If it's family ties, shouldn't it have been Michael J. Fox?
It should have been. So, well, I mean, which... Oh, never mind. I'm not going to make that joke. it was going to be a genetic joke, and I'm not going to do that.
That's probably a good move.
Yeah. So, going to move on. Marriages between more distant relatives have been much more common, with one estimate being that 80% of all marriages in history have been between second cousins or closer. So, see, when you guys make fun of Alabama, Alabama is just repeating history over and over again.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying that it's not a perfect microcosm of the format of our show.
All right, so then another type of marriage is a child marriage, which is a marriage where one or both spouses are under the age of 18. It is related to child betrothal and teenage pregnancy. So this was like, and I'm trying to think, because I know, like, you know, sometimes our shows kind of bleed into, you know, there's like a little bit of it bleeds into another episode. And I don't remember if we've ever covered this statistic, but when I read this, I was like, what the fuck? So child marriage was common throughout history, even up until the 1900s in the United States, where in 1880, in the state of Delaware, the age of consent for marriage was 7 years old.
Oh, Jesus what? Christ.
I know.
What?
What the fuck?
Delaware? What the hell are you doing up there?
When I was seven, I don't think I even ever once successfully went to the bathroom.
Yeah. I know. I can't even make a sandwich by myself. Like, how am I going to be like, I'm what? Cool. Let's get married.
Yeah. Like, no, I'm pretty sure this is the person I want to be with for the rest of my life.
Well, I mean, honestly, I am technically at seven. I am middle aged. So, I mean, it is 1880. True. In 2017, over half the United States has no explicit minimum age to marry, and several states set the age as low as 14.
Wait, if you're going to, like, isn't that have, fucking like, the age of... Why do they stop at seven for the age of consent? Why can't it just be, like, a baby?
Yeah, why not one? Like, what's the point?
Yeah, like
where did they really sit around and go, all right, when does someone legitimately like know what they want? I would say seven. You know, my 7 year old knows what he wants for lunch.
When are you as half as tall as you're gonna be? It's seven.
No, that's two.
Is it two, really? That's are you two, half as tall? Yeah. Well then
Wait,
there you
at
go.
Two, you're half as tall as you're gonna be?
Yeah.
Is that a real thing?
It's a real thing. So it's a good indication of how tall your children will be when they're two. You measure them and then you double it. And then you walk them down the aisle, apparently.
No, you wait 5 years.
Yeah.
So, child marriage can also occur in the context of bride kidnapping, which there was that whole group of terrorists that kidnapped a bunch of kids.
I know what you're talking about.
Started with a B.
The girls' school. There was that girls' school, and they all got kidnapped, right? Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So while child marriage is observed for both boys and girls, the overwhelming majority of child spouses are girls. In many cases, only one marriage partner is a child, usually the female, due to the importance placed upon female virginity. Causes of child marriage include poverty, bride price, dowry, laws that allow child marriages, religious and social pressures, religious customs, fear of remaining unmarried, and perceived inability of women to work for money.
Bride price.
I can't imagine a time in our culture where this was like considered, any of this was considered okay. I mean, I know it's not just necessarily our culture, but like just in human history.
Human culture, yeah.
But
yeah,
I mean, but if you look at like most of it, most of civilized human history, this shit's been okay. You know?
Then it's not quite civilized then, is it?
No.
Bride price is like, it's like, nope, she, no, I can't. It's like going to a fucking store and picking out.
A lot of times what will happen, and more, so it's not so much in developed countries anymore, but in undeveloped countries, you know, or where agriculture is still a main source of income, a lot of times what will happen is families, poorer families, will sell their daughter to a wealthier man, and that, you know, because that family needs that money. And so there's actually, I didn't have this in there, but there's this charity group called Planner International, and you can give to them. And one of the things they do, a lot of things, but one of the main things they do is they get girls around the world in school, and they actually will pay those dowries or pay those bride prices to that family. So instead of that family selling that child into marriage, they keep them, they get the money, and that girl gets to go to school. So Planner International, check it out. It's a great organization. And one of the reasons you would do that, because girls who marry before 18 are at greater risk of becoming victims of domestic violence than those who marry later, especially when they are married to a much older man. So that is the only part of this that's depressing.
The first part of the victimization is marrying them when they're children.
Yeah.
So I can see how that would, anyone that's going to want to do that is going to just continue that trend.
Yeah.
It's fucked up.
It's way fucked up. And this, yeah.
Hey, John, what did you say? Was it Planet International?
No. Plan, P-L-A-N, International.
Okay.
It's a great organization. You can do like a monthly thing, and it's like they basically, it's like their goal is to like overall, like again, they give money to boys and girls, but it's like they want to educate girls, because educating girls gives them a much better chance in their life. Anybody listening, I've been given to that organization for about 9 years, and it's an amazing organization. So if you have an extra $35-$40 a month, it makes such a huge difference. So, or $10, whatever.
You've been given $40 a month for 9 years?
Well, it's, they keep bumping me up, because apparently kids are getting more expensive. So I'm like, these are undeveloped countries. What the fuck, man? So. But what am I going to say? They're like, hey, Mr. Banks, we need to increase your thing by $3 a month. I'm like, yeah, okay, that's cool. I'm not going to be an asshole. Group marriage, which we talked about we were going to do, is a form of polyamory in which more than two persons from a family unit, with all the members of the group marriage being considered to be married to all the other members of the group marriage, and all members of the marriage share parental responsibilities for any children arising from their marriage. Yeah, you know, maybe we shouldn't do that. You guys both have kids. I don't have kids. I feel like I'm coming into a really shitty deal. So
that's saying, like, if a bunch of people get married, then they're all responsible for all the kids?
Yeah, so basically it's like everybody raises kids together.
It takes a village, man.
Yeah, it takes a village.
It actually works out pretty sweet for me, because I'm the one having a baby, so I could be like, hey, I gotta go out. You guys just watch this thing. And
I mean, well, we could just have Jack. You know, hey, Jack, just make sure the baby doesn't die, all right? Just, like, play computer games next to the baby.
Yeah. Just keep him in your eyesight.
And then we all go out.
I'm not letting him be responsible for Kevin's baby.
Well, that's
okay.
That's not a glowing endorsement.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I have nothing else to say.
I was just like, joke. No, I got no joke. No country legally condones group marriages, neither under the law nor as common law marriage.
No country?
No country.
Really? Wow. I don't know why. I guess I figured some crazy fucking country out there. Like, just, well, like, this is great.
Eritrea.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely countries that have polygamy, but no country endorses like group marriage. So, you know, so there's countries where there's one woman and three husbands, or one man and two wives, but no country is illegal to be couples married to each other.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah. So I don't know what that's about.
So you're saying we all have to ditch our wives?
Yes. Well, but maybe with Canada, you know, and everything that's going to happen, maybe we can convince them, you know.
I don't think we have to ditch our wives. I think that we just have to kind of just not acknowledge what we're doing to the government of Canada.
Yeah. We're like Mormons who still commit bigamy. So
polygamy.
Well, but bigamy is, I mean, it's polygamy, but it's bigamy because bigamy is a law. You're breaking a law. So bigamy is when you're having polygamy.
There's way too many buzzwords. Way too many.
Okay.
Polygamy has been condemned as being a form of human rights abuse, with concerns arising over domestic abuse, forced marriage, and neglect. The vast majority of the world's countries, including virtually all of the world's developed nations, do not permit polygamy. And the reason for that is, again, kind of like where you end up. The problem with it is, if it's all consenting adults, who gives a shit? But a lot of times what happens is you end up with children, child brides in these kind of relationships.
Perfect world, in a vacuum, it would be okay.
Yeah.
But obviously it's ripe for people taking. Did you see that show Big Love? Either one of you guys?
I watched a couple episodes, but I didn't get into it.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah. My wife watched it a lot and she really liked it. And it didn't so much appeal to me, but it was still kind of interesting. And it didn't have nearly as many sex scenes as I had hoped it did.
So you moved on to Game of Thrones and you were happy.
Who was the girl, the woman in that? Because there's
Jennifer Goodwin?
No.
Chloe Sevigny?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So I used to do yoga, and I was at this place in Silver Lake, and she came in there one day, and I was like, oh my God, it's her, you know, and she was sitting right beside me. And the whole time I wasn't focused on the yoga, because I just would be like, hey, you're that lady from Big Love. So, but I didn't.
Is that the whole story?
Yeah.
That's a great story, John.
Then we got married?
You're not making it better.
Yeah, it's not great.
All right. Monogamy became the guiding principle for Western marriages sometime between the 6th and 9th century. And there was a protracted battle between the Catholic Church and the old nobility and kings, who wanted to say, I can take a second wife. And the church was saying, no, you cannot. And the church eventually prevailed above the kings and the nobility.
Why was it, is it something in the Bible, or why did the church have an issue with it?
You know, I didn't research that.
I'm just curious. What do you guys like? I'm just curious because, you know, I mean, we're not very religious on this show.
Right.
So anyone who's religious, go ahead and hit stop. But if you haven't by now, I'm not sure what you're still doing here. But I feel like it's pretty obvious why to people like us, why the church became as powerful as it did, for financial gain and for power and all that stuff. So like, what do they care?
That's a really cynical tone on what the church did. I mean, it's accurate.
Well, I mean, I know
what do they care, though? I'm just curious.
Right. Priests can't marry because then that would make the church liable. Like, I know that's why priests are not allowed to marry.
Why is it? Because they're liable for what?
Well, so basically, if I were a priest and I were to marry you, and then I'm not an employee of the church. I basically am part of the church. So if we were to get married and then get divorced, then you could go after that good old Catholic greed, and like, you get like a fucking church in Boston.
And plus,
it's
like a spouse and children to support on church money.
Yeah, on the church money. Yeah,
besides the divorce aspect, right? Like, if you get married, then you got to support.
And they got to use that money to pay off those molestation
absolutely
lawsuits,
which add up.
And imagine how expensive health insurance was back then. You know, I don't know. I'm just.
I was actually like, I was thinking like, yeah, how expensive? Like, no,
you're like, yeah, doesn't make sense. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Rome. Like, it was very expensive.
It wasn't Blue Cross, but it was just the cross.
It was just the cross insurance company. Yeah, I don't know. I was just it just got me thinking. But you're right. I didn't realize that about. I honestly didn't know why priests weren't allowed to get married, because it seems like that would help the whole, you know, molestation thing quite a bit.
Yeah, you think so? You think?
I think initially they didn't think about what kind of people it would attract.
So, yeah, maybe it also has to do with, you know, because the Catholic Church is you cannot have sex for it's like every time you have sex you have to be making a baby, or at least like coming inside, right? You're not supposed to pull out. So maybe that was
another
thing.
Excuse me?
You are not supposed to pull out. You're supposed to make babies. That's what that shit's for. It's in the Bible.
No, I know what you meant, but I did not appreciate your language.
Yeah, we have, this is a fucking clean podcast here. Kids yeah. listen to this fucking shit.
I said pull
out. You said
out.
Coming inside. Come on,
yeah,
dude.
That's gross. It's really gross.
Ejaculating?
Oh, God, he's getting worse. These aren't words that we're supposed to use.
But I guess because so then if you, so you couldn't, so you would abstain from sex because if you're having sex and you're having kids, then the church has to pay for the kids. Kind of like the same thing. But even if you stay married, right. Maybe, I don't know.
Those priests were fucking, right? Especially back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
I think they're still fucking some of them, right?
Yeah.
I actually dated a girl who is Catholic. And she
dated a priest.
Yeah, I mean, I was 11 and he was 35. Whatever. You know, it was a good time. I was the age of consent in Kentucky. So, I dated a girl who, a woman, like in my 20s, who was a virgin, and she ended up being a nun. Like she took that vow and all that stuff. And it was like,
did she remain a virgin after she dated you?
She to my knowledge, she never lost her virginity. And to
I mean,
day,
with you,
she's literally a 40-year-old virgin.
She never got the John Banks cereal.
Did John drive someone to the nunnery?
Yeah,
probably.
That's really bad, John. Yeah.
I mean,
you made her never want to have sex with another human being on the planet. Yep. Good job.
You shouldn't have given her the Kashi cereal. You should have gotten something better.
Kashi wasn't even around then.
Grape nuts.
You guys make grape stupid nuts, comments. There you go. Still, monogamous marriage was very different from the modern conception of mutual fidelity. Though marriage was legally or sacramentally recognized between just one man and one woman, until the 19th century, men had wide latitude to engage in extramarital affairs. Any
Boom.
Children resulting from these trysts, however, would be illegitimate with no claim to the man's inheritance.
That's the way we like it. They're called bastards.
Yeah.
It's the Jon Snow. The Jon Snow of the...
It was Jon Snow. Mm-hmm. Isn't that fucked up?
See, everything can come back to Game of Thrones.
I mean,
it's a perfect world right there.
So,
I think we should rename our podcast.
Game of Thrones?
Game of Thrones defeats itself.
GOT.
Just Game of Thrones. What the hell? Oh, you know?
Okay. I think someone's got that copyrighted already.
Well, we'll find out.
Okay.
Marriages in the West were originally contracts between the families of two partners with the Catholic Church and the state staying out of it. In 1215... the Catholic Church decreed that partners had to publicly post notices of impending marriage in a local parish to cut down on the frequency of invalid marriages. The church eliminated that requirement in the 1980s.
What?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I know. It's like every time we get a date like this, I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? So for like over 700 years, you had to do this. Still,
was this Delaware again?
Yep. So. You had to post a notice of, today I intend to marry that 8-year-old. Still, until the 1500s, the church accepted a couple's word that they had exchanged marriage vows with no witnesses or corroborating evidence needed.
It sounds like it's ripe for abuse.
Right? I mean, pretty much most of history, it's been shitty for most people. So that's pretty much what every episode is like, oh, right, it was shitty for women, it was shitty for kids, it was, unless you're a white dude with land, it was pretty much shitty.
We've come so far.
Yeah, no shit.
I thought you said it was not going to get depressing. Anyway.
That's, I thought we hit bottom. Man, don't put that on me. In the last several hundred years,
you're the reason I'm living, buddy. I'm putting that on you.
In the last several hundred years, the state has played a greater role in marriage. For instance, Massachusetts began requiring marriage license in 1639, and by the 19th century, marriage licenses were common in the United States. So by about 250 years ago, the notion of love matches gained traction. And that's when people probably started leaving their cards for women. So,
I like callbacks.
Meaning marriage was based on love and possibly sexual desire, but mutual attraction.
Possibly.
Well, I mean, it's like probably more like love. You know, I don't know. It was how could you have sexual desire when everybody is literally dressed head to toe and to take off everything takes an hour and you're in candlelight? Probably not
that
hot.
I feel like that leaves a lot to the imagination. I would definitely be able to get turned on like that.
Well, plus also, like, there wasn't a lot of, like, you know, casual sex going on. So, like, they had to, like, fall in love.
Bullshit. Since the beginning of human history, there's been a lot of casual
sex. I agree. I know what you mean. But I'm saying, like, it wasn't like it is today. Like, we're dating and you have sex and stuff like that. It was more like you had to you know, I mean, people fell in love in like an hour and a half and got married in a day and a half. So basically, because the dude wanted to have sex.
And probably because he had to take a train for fucking 6 weeks to get to go see her. So it's like, I'm for sure marrying you.
And if you're not married to her, you constantly got to write letters to her. Nobody wants to do that. So
sounds exhausting.
Dear
LOL,
Catherine.
Like emojis. You have to handwrite your emojis.
Oh, can you imagine having to handwrite all that? I mean, yeah. I mean, all the GIFs. I mean, how do you draw the GIFs?
Oh man, it's got to be like one of those flip books, right?
you have your indentured servants do the facial expressions. They go to the house, knock on the door. Yeah. Mutual attraction in marriage wasn't important until about a century ago. So there you go. So nobody really gave a shit how anybody looked until about 100 years ago.
Okay.
Around the world. Family arranged alliances have gradually given way to love matches, and a transition from an agricultural to a market economy plays a big role in that transition. So, from this Stephanie Kuntz, it's less important for people to have permission of their parents to wait and give them an inheritance or to work on their parents' land. So it's more possible for young people to say, heck, I'm going to marry who I want. Is that what you did? You say heck? Either one of you guys before you got married, you're like, heck.
I can't remember the last time I said heck. Oh, heck.
Heck, Sheena, let's do this. We don't have to worry about working on our parents' land. And she's like,
oh, heck, my arm just fell off.
Yeah, heck is a really stupid word.
It is a really stupid word. I think if my son says heck, I'm going to be like, what? Say shit. Just say shit. Fuck. You sound like an asshole.
Say fuck right now. You say it right now.
You say fuck. You sound like an asshole.
You say fuck like a normal person.
I'm three.
Oh, Dad, I don't give a heck about your rules.
Yeah.
How many times have I told you, listen to the podcast, get your vocabulary from our podcast.
Well, let me just tell you guys something. Ray, who's 12, does not have a problem saying the word heck. He does not say that ever.
No, he says, fuck, right? Didn't he say fuck?
I mean, okay, so last night when he got out of his hockey practice, he gets in the car, I go, hey, what's the matter? You look kind of bummed out right now. He's like, oh, yeah, I played like shit. I'm like, you know you're 12, right? You don't just tell me you played like shit. Come on, buddy. Just show a little respect. You fucking asshole.
It's a true mystery how he ended up with that kind of a mouth. It really is.
I don't know.
We're trying to figure it out.
If you ever met Jen, you'd be like, oh, that makes sense. Jen's got a potty mouth.
She swears like a sailor.
Modern markets also allow women to play a greater economic role, which led to their greater independence. Still, marriage wasn't about equality until about 50 years ago. So this, again, is like, this show should really just be like, we should call it What the Fuck, which I know there's a show that's already called that.
I think you've suggested this before, too.
Yeah, it's like doing research. It's just like, what the fuck? So at that time, women and men had unique rights and responsibilities within marriage. For instance, in the United States, marital rape was legal in many states until the 1970s.
Yeah, I don't think there was such a thing as marital rape.
Yeah, they didn't even acknowledge it.
Yeah, they didn't call it that. Yeah. A woman often could not open credit cards in their own names. Women were entitled to support from their husbands, but didn't have the right to decide on the distribution of community property. And if a wife was killed or injured, a man could sue the responsible party for depriving him of services around the home, whereas women didn't have the same option.
Seriously. I mean, it's Trump's vision of America.
It really is. So here you have the guy who's a breadwinner, right? And the wife is staying home working. So if the husband gets killed, her family's going to be fucked. They're all going to go into poverty. It's like going to be the worst thing in the world for him. But if the guy's wife dies, he can sue whoever killed, like whatever happened. It's fucking crazy.
Up until 1970.
Well, and like you said, I mean, I guess with the court getting packed with a bunch of conservatives, it's like starting in 2020.
Yeah. Fucking Delaware.
I think that Audrey Plaza is from Delaware, so I'm not super negative about Delaware because I like her. She's super funny.
She is. She is. She's very funny.
He's just kind of looking off into the distance.
I'm thinking about her.
Yeah, I can tell.
I might watch an episode of Parks and Rec after this.
She's a fan of the podcast.
Yeah.
She is.
She writes in all the time.
Yeah.
She pins it in cursive.
She's calligraphy.
Yeah.
She's classy.
So about 50 years ago, the notion of men and women had identical obligations within marriage began to take root. Most partners conceived of their unions in terms of flexible division of labor, companionship, and mutual sexual attraction. So, Greg, that would not have been a good time for you.
Oh. I don't understand what you're saying.
That's I'm talking about the mutual sexual attraction.
I don't get it.
I'm saying you're not attractive.
Are you insulting my wife right now?
No, I'm insulting you.
No, it sounds more like you're insulting my wife. I don't have to look at me. Jen, I don't have to have sex with me.
Jen is,
so you're insulting my wife.
Hey, you guys keep going. I gotta hit the head.
That was mean. I'm going to tell her. I'm going to text her right now, actually.
You're going to text her right now? All right,
yeah.
Please.
I'm going to tell her that John Banks says that you have... By the way, you agreed to marry me not fucking 30 minutes ago.
Not because I'm attracted to you.
No, he's just trying to get out of this country.
Yeah. It's. I'm not. Hey, you serve a purpose.
God, this. And that purpose I'm on a roller coaster right now. Just my self-esteem.
Hey, you know what? This is going to cheer you up, buddy. You ready?
No, I don't think it's going to cheer me up.
Because this is going to cheer you up. Because we're circling back around.
Is it about food?
It's not about food. It's about
okay.
So
good luck.
Changes in straight marriage paved the way for gay marriage. So, huh? You, me, Kevin?
I don't see how it's related to what you just said about me not being attractive.
I'm saying that I'm willing to marry you and we can do it now. Once marriage was not legally based on complementary gender-based roles, gay marriage seemed like a logical next step. One of the reasons for the stunningly rapid increase in acceptance of same-sex marriage is because heterosexuals have completely changed their notion of what marriage is between a man and a woman. So now we believe it's based on love and attraction and sexuality and all these things that we didn't think 100 years ago.
So about 100 years ago, it was based on making an army of workers.
Well, that was, I mean, I think, like 100 years ago, like love started coming to it, but it still wasn't attractiveness.
Okay.
Right? It was still, you know, but yeah, was it like, I think, you know, before that, it was definitely all about, you know, what can we do together or how can we tie our land together or how can we keep our families wealthy?
Yeah, it was a business transaction.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah. And the people had no say in it. Like the people getting married had no say. It was their parents made all the choices.
Yeah, so. That's how it was for me and Sheena.
Yeah. You know, and you were probably like, I don't want to marry a ghost. Or yeah. Sheena was probably like, I don't want to marry a white pale ghost. And they were like, we're going to make you do it.
Wait. What?
You were saying with Sheena, like, her parents forced, because you're pale.
No? You know, I think something that's happening in this episode tonight, John, is that you're insulting my marriage and Kevin's marriage and our wives.
No.
That's what's happening.
I'm insulting you and Kevin. I'm not insulting
our partners. Our partners like picked us, John. So yeah.
And plus, the way I'm going to edit this is it's going to be basically just you ripping on our wives for 20
that's
minutes.
Perfect.
That's going to be the whole episode.
Jen already loves you, John.
Is it
boy,
so hot in here? Oh God, it's so hot here. Several kinds of.
You're going to get a strongly worded text message.
Wait, from who?
From Jen.
She doesn't know my number.
Yeah, she does.
And here's the thing. I know Sheena doesn't know my number because Kevin won't give me her number, so we've never texted.
You ask me every day.
I know, but I haven't gotten the number.
That's true. So, yeah. Because you ask me every day. It's weird.
Well, I'm not going to give up. That's called persistence. All right. Several kinds of same-sex marriages have been documented in indigenous and lineage-based cultures. In the Americas, Wewa, part of the Zuni tribe, was a Ihamana, which is a male individual who, at least some of the time, dress and live in the roles usually filled by women in that culture. He went representing the Zuni to Washington, where he met President Grover Cleveland. He was a man who went dressed as a woman. So, and this would have been, when was Grover Cleveland president?
Like, I think it was a while ago.
Yeah, like.
Because I'm not sure anyone's named their kid Grover in a long time.
Wasn't he assassinated? Wasn't he one of the presidents who got assassinated?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question.
I don't know. I think, wasn't he a Muppet?
That's very
his
true.
Last name wasn't Cleveland. It was just Grover.
He was so. Also
you
blue.
Don't know what his
he
last
blue.
Name was.
He was blue. He was sickly.
Well, Grover was like the Madonna of the Muppets because he was just Grover. You had Kermit the Frog,
yeah,
Miss Piggy.
True.
He was just Grover.
That is true. Yeah.
Except Elmo,
Bert, Ernie. Yeah, there's a lot of them, John. I don't think this is going to work.
That's not going to hold water.
Well, it was Bert and Ernie Epstein. We all know that. So everyone knows that. So.
Wait, what?
Wasn't Bert and Ernie Epstein.
Nope. So. Wasn't that.
No? All right.
Nope.
While it was a relative new practice to great... man, you guys got me all... You got me all hot and bothered with Bert.
You did that to yourself.
it's talking about getting married to us. It's just it's getting you all verklempt.
Oh, I'm so sweaty. Well, it is relative... What? God damn it. I misled one word.
Hey, what'd you guys think of Miss Piggy?
She seemed like she'd be a demon in the sack.
Yeah, yeah. She really did. Yeah, she's... you know, what is that? The thick thighs save lives. That's what they say. Mm.
So. But you know what? Clingy. Pretty clingy.
Yeah. What about Kermit? You think he was okay with that?
With a polyamorous relationship?
Yeah.
I feel like Kermit, first of all, could have used like a really good leg day.
So, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
He's pretty lanky.
He's very lanky.
Yeah.
But you know, and then I mean, but he had like a bloated stomach. So,
yeah, he did. He did.
Yeah.
You're right.
He not a
he
lot
must
of
must have had some kind of digestive.
Yeah,
issue.
Well, I don't think he was getting the right kind of nutrition. You know, he lived on Sesame Street.
Maybe he had leaky gut syndrome or something.
Maybe it was a tapeworm.
While it is a relatively new practice to grant same-sex couples the same form of legal marital recognition as mixed-sex couples, there is some history of same-sex unions around the world. At least two of the Roman emperors were in same-sex unions, and in fact, 13 out of the first 14 Roman emperors were believed to be bisexual or exclusively homosexual. The first
what was
Roman
wrong with the 14th one?
I think that was right around the time Christianity started to come around. The first Roman emperor to have married a man was Nero, who is reported to have married two other men on different occasions. And Nero, we've actually talked about him before, and I don't remember which episode it was. So this is from history.com. So on June 26, 2015, the Supreme Court announces its decision in Obergefell versus Hodges. By one vote, the court rules that same-sex marriage cannot be banned in the United States and that all same-sex marriages must be recognized nationwide, finally granting same-sex couples equal rights to heterosexual couples under the law. Writing for the majority, Justice Anthony Kennedy said, "The right to marry is a fundamental right inherent in the liberty of the person, and under the Due Process and Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, couples of the same sex may not be deprived of that right and that liberty." So
that's
cool.
Beautiful.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, it really is, right? That's like one of the most beautiful sentences I've ever read.
Took a really long fucking time to get there, though.
It did. Yeah. It did.
No, seriously.
All right, so now we're going to get into polyamory. Right. And so it's like I know that was a lot about marriage and monogamy, but as I said at the beginning of the episode, I am polyamorous. Our my fiance and I are both polyamorous.
I hope you both are.
Well, yeah.
Otherwise, well, it's just cheating, John.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we are what is called ethical non-monogamous. So all parties involved know what's happened. So polyamory comes from Greek poly, meaning many or several, and Latin amor, meaning love. So to use that in this
shouldn't
sentence,
it just mean sex in your case?
Well, no, because we are developing other relationships with other people, so it's not just about sex.
Oh, okay.
So I mean, hey, way to shit on my relationship. Thanks.
I'm not trying to. Maybe I asked it with a bit of negative tone, but you clarified and I accept it. So move on.
So in Greg's defense, admittedly, I did think it was more about you have a relationship, but you also just sleep with other people. I also thought it was mostly about sex on the other side.
So we, both of us have...
This is why we have this podcast, to learn.
To clarify what's happening in my sex life. Yeah.
No, it's to jump in. It's to jump in and make assumptions.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah, no, so we both have people that we are... we have people that we are dating and we both keep going out with the same... We each keep going out with the same different person, or person, right? Not the same person, but different people, but we keep going out with
that. Yeah, we want to make that clear.
All right. So polyamory is the practice of or desire for intimate relationships with more than one partner with the informed consent of all partners involved. It has been described as consensual, ethical, or responsible non-monogamy. People who identify as polyamorous believe in an open relationship with a conscious management of jealousy. They do not view sexual and rational exclusivity as necessary for deep, committed, long-term loving relationships. Other people prefer to restrict their sexual activity to only members of the group. This type of closed polyamory relationship are usually referred to as polyfidelity.
All right, I'm going to have a lot of questions, so do you want me to hit them as they come up?
Just come on, man. What you
so,
got?
Well, I mean, the jealousy thing is certainly a big part of it because, like, I I'll say right now, I am not a jealous person at all. Like, I'm just not, and neither is my wife. Like, that's one thing that, like, I've dated jealous women in the past, and it's something I've always hated, because it's like, I can talk to another woman without wanting to have sex with her. My wife and I are very much not that way. But if she was like, oh yeah, I fucked this dude the other day, I'd be immensely jealous. So, like, how do you manage that? I mean, is it an emotion that you just doesn't come up for you guys, or how do you manage it?
So, yeah, okay. So I think people, right? Like, we're all different, right? And we grew up different. We have different cultures, and we're just born a certain way, right? So it's like, you know, it's like, I think, like, for someone who is gay, they're born gay, right? They don't choose that life. It's like, it is who they are as a person. If you're straight, it is who you are. And so, you know, if you're bisexual or any, all that stuff in between. So I think this kind of falls into that same thing, because so when Courtney and I first met, like, we, like, our first date, we talked, we both knew that we did not want to be monogamous. And I will say, this is my first relationship
it's a funny way to say it. When I met her, I was like, I am not going to be monogamous. Yeah,
there's no way she's going to be the only woman I ever have sex with again.
But the one thing we didn't do is, like, we talked about it, that we didn't want to be monogamous, but we never really got into what that meant for us, right? And it wasn't until we started actually opening up our relationship that all these things started coming out. So I am not a jealous person, just in general, and I'm not, like, it doesn't bother me at all. I don't think about it, like, you know, but I do have my lines. Like, when she goes out with her guy, like, I don't want to... Like, I know they're having sex, but I don't want the details. Because when I have the details, I'm like, ugh, I don't want to know this. Right? But it's like, I know it's happening. Well,
okay, so what does that do to you if you were to hear that, though? Does it make you jealous? Or is it just more like...
It doesn't make me... I mean, maybe. I don't think it does, though. But it's just like, no, I don't want to hear it. Right? Like, but look, when she's out and when she's on a date and I know that's happening, it doesn't bother me. So there's a... I forget what the word is. But there's basically a... So there's, like, the opposite of jealousy. I can't find it right now, but so it's you actually have joy for your partner knowing that she is going out and feeling sexualized and feeling sexy and feeling, you know, all this stuff. And so I don't know about you guys, but for me, like, in my long-term monogamous relationships, there's always part of this, like, flame that dies. Like, you're right, you can only be in a new relationship for so long. And it's like, so she gets to go out and she gets to experience that. And she gets to be seen differently by that guy than, not that I see her, but he definitely has a different energy and a different reaction to her. Right? Does that make sense?
No, I think it makes sense. Yeah.
I think you're discussing the fact that, like, you get to kind of get that new love, lust feeling.
Yeah, that excitement.
And everything's novel.
Right.
And it also allows, you know, one another, for you guys both to feel like you're still vital and attractive to other people, and you can act out on that.
Right. Right.
Whereas I'm not so shallow, and I don't need that.
you're very sensitive and you need constant reassurance. So I'm pretty sure that is
that a sign of being shallow?
I think that's a sign of being Jewish. That's because Courtney's Jewish, and that's also something she needs. So I'm starting to believe that's a Jewish thing. So that's a stereotype. So that's only two
it
Jewish
is a
people.
Stereotype.
But that's true. I apologize.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting, John, because I think that, like, I see what you're saying. And I think, you know, you said people are born, you know, gay and stuff like that. Of course, I agree with that. But I do wonder if jealousy is learned to some point, to some degree.
I don't know that it is. I kind of think it could be.
I could see it being a learned behavior because of, you know, if you were born, you know, if you guys had a kid and he understood what your relationship was like, he or she understood what your relationship was like, they might grow up to be, like, not jealous too, you know?
Right.
I think, yeah. I think that this is more of a social construct that fits your lifestyle as opposed to something that you're born with. Like, I don't know that you can call polyamory a orientation.
Well,
like,
so there's
physiological,
there's, like,
biological orientation.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Right. Well, right. No, well,
I'm not judging it.
Right.
At
right.
All.
So I guess what
it should be more. Right. The definition is more just like, I want to stick my dick in as many things as possible.
Or not, but, or choose not to, or maybe even just choose to have the freedom to, and maybe never do it.
But so doing that is having an open relationship, and that's not really polyamory, right? So having, like, having sex partners outside of your relationship, and they're just one night stands. Or you know, like, just whatever, like, booty calls, that is more of an open relationship. Like,
isn't that how you guys started?
Do what?
Isn't that how you guys started?
It is how we got started, right? Because that's what I'm saying is, like, you know, so it's, I think it's, you know, we all grew up, and I get this is not for everybody, right? This is definitely not for everybody. In fact, it's not for most people. Like all my friends that know that we are polyamorous, it's like their all their first response is like, oh my God, I could not imagine my wife having sex with another guy. You know, or if it's the wife I'm talking to, she's like, oh, I can't imagine like my husband having sex with another woman. I would not be comfortable with that. And it's like funny because that's the first thing that everybody thinks about, right? And to me, that's the least threatening part of it, right? The huge threat is, what if my partner goes off and like has this connection with this person and it builds and builds and builds, and then they're like 10 times the match that she and I will ever be? That's the threat.
Yeah, right? I agree with that. That's the thing that I think about.
Sure.
Yeah. And like we've... Kevin, I just have a bit of I talked to John about this a lot, so I kind of know where he's at. And my whole opinion about it is, if you're like an adult in this relationship and you're honest and open, I think it's wonderful. Like, do whatever fulfills you.
Absolutely, there's nothing wrong with it.
I'm not saying that you don't agree with that. Yeah. I'm not. I just kind of know a little bit of where John's head's at maybe more than you do.
Sure.
And so, Courtney, we've had, and I will say, like for us. Right. One of the great things about this is we are in constant communication about what we're feeling and what's happening for us. And, you know, and it's really awesome because, you know, she can't like because she does tend to get more jealous when I go out. But now we know what that means. Right. Because that's the thing is like when you get jealous, it's really about like what am I missing? What are you giving this person that I don't feel like I'm getting? Right. And if you can kind of figure out what that is, then you address that, and then you realize that this person isn't getting anything else that you're getting, right? Does that make sense? So you guys,
it does. It
a
does.
Little bit. Yeah, I think so. I think I followed that. Yeah.
But you know, so we have this like great open, constant conversation. But you know, it's like I said, we knew from the beginning we were going to be open. But when it started, it was like, you know, we are to this day we're still navigating it, right? We're figuring out like what are our we call them guidelines, right? So it's like, for example, I do not mind if Courtney spends the night with the guy that she is seeing. Courtney does not want me to spend the night with the person that I am seeing, right? And so it's like, and so you can't think of it like I used to think in terms of everything where it needs to be a fair, balanced relationship, but it's really, it needs to be, what are both people, or because it expands outside of yourself, so what are all the people in that relationship comfortable with? What works for everybody, right? And so it's like, yeah. So it's kind of interesting.
I could definitely see the advantage of being so open with your relationship that you don't have to harbor any resentments, because it's almost expected for you to communicate what goes outside, what's offside for you, basically, right? So if you're uncomfortable with something, you're allowed to share it, and you know, hopefully your partner respects that, and you know, you agree to respect each other's levels of comfort.
Is there any rules? Exactly. Is there any guidelines as far as like, are you, how can you just, can you be dating as many people as you want? Or is there sort of a,
I mean, we don't really have a guideline on that, but we also just have, and it's kind of funny because we will get to that in this, like where it talks about time management and, you know, there's only so much time.
I'm honestly just thinking about how I could use more help on the podcast, and if you're, yeah, right, exactly. You're spending time with, if you have like six fiancés, it's just you know, can't have that. Yeah. We just can't have that.
No, well, I mean, legally I can't have six fiancés, so, but just so for you guys know, I have three fiancés. No.
Well, if you meet somebody new and then you decide to spend a month with them going to Italy, you know, is that going to be okay with everybody involved?
Well, no, he can't spend the night. So that's a little tricky.
Yeah. You know, and so no, I mean, but in some, you know, some people end up where they're called thruples, where they're, you know, it's two guys and a woman, or two women and a guy, or three guys, or, you know, but sometimes it's like you end up where people open up their relationship and that person actually ends up coming into that relationship.
Being part of the family. So
yeah, being part of the family.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
You know,
yeah.
So, you know,
now
so
you're talking, John. I'm just kidding, honey. I'm just kidding.
So, but that's the thing is like, that's what's really fascinating about this. And let me go back to where I was talking about the gender thing. And you know, I agree with you, but like there's something in me where I just don't have that. Like when it comes to sex, I have no jealousy whatsoever. And Courtney
does. Did
you
say the ginger thing?
Gender.
No, I said the gender thing.
Oh, okay.
Like when I was kind of using like homos, like you're just born, you know, with a certain sexual desire. And Greg was saying, well, it's like, I can't, you know, it's a choice rather than how you're born, but I right. do think it's how I've always been that way. I have never cared. Like when, like, but that was the thing is like, I felt like I should care. So if somebody cheated on me, I was like, can't believe you cheated on me. But the truth is, it's not about the sex. It's about the betrayal, right? It's like, if you wanted to do that, then just be honest about it. So I think for me, like, this is the best type of relationship that I can ever be in, because this allows me to, like, it's just open and honest, and I thrive in that. So Courtney's even said that. She's just like, sometimes when we're like having tension, she's like, you need to go on a date.
Wow. And I do. That is something that, yeah, that would be a crazy thing to hear.
Right. And I do. And then I come back and it's just like, oh man, I feel so much better. I'm so much more open. I'm so much more all these things. I'm so much more loving. I'm so much more caring. I'm so much more compassionate.
So yeah. By definition, in this kind of dynamic that you have set up, she's your go-to person, go-to partner, so no other relationship will ever kind of be on the same level.
Right. You know, here's where it gets really tricky, right? Because we've had a lot of conversations about that, where kind of what you guys are bringing up is just like, you know, it's like, or maybe, but it's like where, you know, the threat is meeting somebody and falling in love with them and they're a better fit than she is, right? But that's, but I don't think it's like, that's not something that happens in a moment, right? You kind of see yourself like getting more attached and, you know, and then, but that's the thing is like, you honestly, like Courtney has said, she's like, oh wow, like I'm really in, you know, like I'm really into this guy. And, you know, there's part of me that's still like, oh fuck, right? It's like, what am I doing? You know? but then it's like, I really do get joy and knowing that she's having these feelings. Like, I get joy in knowing that she is feeling good.
Yeah, but what if she never came back?
Then I would be sad and happy for her. You know, because here's the thing, right? Like, you guys are both in marriages, right? And you're in monogamous marriages. And Greg, you've been married for 20 plus years? I'm not making it, but like somewhere around there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Kevin, you've been married for what, 7 now? 8?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and so here's the thing. Like, you guys have... Both of you have really good marriages, and I love that, and I think it's awesome. But you have no guarantee that they will last, right? You have no guarantee that, like, there's, you know, it's like people have affairs, people fall out of love, people, you know, shit happens with couples. If it didn't, we wouldn't have a 50% divorce rate in this country. So the way I think about it is that it's no more likely to happen than if we weren't doing this. But everything is on the table.
Yeah, those are good points.
And I hope to God that you both stay married forever. I love your wives, and it would kill me if you guys got divorced or anything happened. But I'm just saying, like, just using that example, that it's like, I think, right, it's no more or no less dangerous or threatening or, you know, any of that kind of stuff than any other relationship. So.
Sure. Yeah,
and
that
maybe,
makes sense.
Maybe I'm an idiot for thinking that. So.
Maybe.
I think you're an idiot for a bunch of other reasons.
Yeah,
not for this, but for a lot.
I mean, that's fair. That is fair. So, due to the stigma surrounding it, polyamory is often practiced privately and kept secret from close friends and family. Approximately 25.8% of polyamorous individuals have experienced discrimination, according to a 2020... approximately 25...
I think it's time for another shot.
I don't think it is. That rum is running through me.
That rum affected your brain. Your brain that's responsible for language.
Yeah. And we already know I'm at a disadvantage. Approximately 25.8% of polyamorous individuals have experienced discrimination, according to a 2012 study by the nonprofit organization Loving More. Some people who are polyamorous have a primary relationship and engage in casual hookups, but most polyamorous people begin secondary relationships with the consent of their primary partner, to whom they are generally married or committed. So, did I just say married? I think I just said married.
Sound like you said murdered.
Your accent comes through every once in a while. It's adorable.
It's cute.
It's going to be married or committed.
I like when he says recognize. That one's good.
You better recognize.
I like when he says naked.
Naked.
How about ambulance? You ever heard him say ambulance?
Ambulance is good, too. Ambulance. Yep, that's a good one.
Research has found that polyamory can offer some surprising benefits, ranging from greater satisfaction and extra help with childcare to increased relationship commitment.
Hmm, there we go. Uh-huh. Now we're on to something. So,
that'll make everyone happy. And plus, you don't have to make, like, the same person doesn't have to make dinner every night.
That's true. You got... You know, maybe. Like, I mean, know. Hey, if we all go to Canada together, that's 6 people. So we each get a night, and Sundays we order in.
That's just you're cooking for pizza. So many people, though. I don't know.
That's a lot.
Can we do Friday pizza night? I like Friday pizza night.
Sure, that's fine. That's fine. Hey, it's all negotiable, you know. So it's all the guidelines. All right, so seven things people with multiple partners want you to know about what it's really like. And this is from a Business Insider, which is the weirdest fucking place for this to
that
be.
That is weird. That is very weird.
I don't know what kind of business they're doing.
This makes business sense. This makes business sense.
This is businessinsider.com, November 5th, 2018, by Lindsay Dodgson. They don't get really jealous. They don't really get jealous. And so to kind of go to that. So many people get jealous in their relationships, whether they like it or not. It's an ugly, upsetting emotion, but it's also basically inevitable in love. So introducing multiple people into your love life might seem like a recipe for disaster. But according to a Dr. Elizabeth Sheff, the author of The Polyamorous Next Door, has been studying polyamory for over two decades and is also in a monogamous relationship with her wife. She told Business Insider that some people generally never experience jealousy. However, she has also seen cases where people believe they are unable to feel it, only to come back years later and learn they actually can. It just takes the right situation or person to trigger it.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense. I think a lot of monogamous marriages or relationships, people experience jealousy. It's just a common thing in any kind of...
I went on a whole thing earlier about how much I hate jealousy, and it drives me nuts. But, you know, I mean, yeah, we can all feel it in certain situations no matter what.
Well, and so for me, because I have experienced this, so what kills me is when she tells me that she found somebody funny.
Oh, yeah.
I swear to God. Yeah. Like, that, yeah. It's so weird, right?
That would be hard.
It's like she's off having, and I know she's having sex with this guy, right? I know that's happening. Yeah, whatever. But she comes back and she's like, oh my God, so-and-so told me he was so funny. I'm like, fuck that guy. You can't go back out with him.
Like, you stop talking to him. You can do whatever you want, and you can blow him, do whatever, but please do not listen to his jokes.
Yeah,
don't
you put
laugh.
A ball gag in his mouth. So... Yeah. So I guess to say I don't get jealous is not true. I just don't get jealous over sex, which I think is when people talk about jealousy, that's what they're talking about.
Yes, someone, a physical desire, I would say. It's
well,
got to be.
Right. When I think about it, I think about it just doesn't have to be sex. It can just be watching your partner just connect with somebody in something that could seem intimate, even if it's just a conversation, and you can see that they're just kind of grooving.
You were that would be you must like, have been like, jealous the whole time you and Jen came out to visit, huh?
That was he did talk about it. It was very rough for him. So the way that Jen and Sheena connected really drove Greg crazy. So
no comment.
And the way that Ray and Sheena connected, that also drove him crazy. So he felt like
this is taking a turn.
That's really creepy, John.
All right, number two. It's not all about sex. Chef said she travels a lot for work, which is why polyamory works out well for her relationship. Sometimes she can be away for 2 months at a time. So she likes her wife to have someone to keep her company while she's away. But that doesn't mean they act on it all the time. So basically, the way their relationship is set up is when she's out of town, she probably has a girlfriend or a boyfriend. Yeah, I don't know what they're, you know, but she has someone. And when she comes back into town, they're pretty much monogamous.
Okay, I have a question. You said that it's not as much about sex as it is about actually for having dating, having a relationship. Is a one night stand frowned upon?
No, I mean it's no.
Because like in that scenario, the reason that I thought of it is because in that scenario, she's off traveling. Let's say she goes to a place she's never been before. She goes out to a bar. She meets someone and she wants to take them back to her hotel room. Is that allowed or no?
Yeah. Okay. Well, a couple of things.
Probably depends on how the people in the relationship, in the primary relationship, set it up.
Exactly. So you know, I just like, you know, one black guy doesn't speak for all black guys, right? I don't speak for all.
I'm talking about your specific situation.
Yeah,
obviously. I know you can't speak for anybody else.
But you know, I would say the common thread for everyone who is polyamorous is that it is about honest, open communication, right? So it's like it's not, you know, so if you and I were dating, Kevin, and you were like, I'm really into, you know, I really like being choked. And I'm like, I don't want to choke you, right? Like, that's just something I can't do that, you know.
So I go to Greg.
Right.
Greg chokes me when I don't ask for it.
I'm going to choke Kevin.
That's called assault. That is assault and battery, and it's illegal. So you need help Let's call me later. We're going to take care of this. You know, so, but our guideline is, so the short answer is yes, but the guideline is that if Courtney was somewhere and she would have to reach out to me, which first of all, that's not Courtney's thing. So she'd never do that. Like, that's just not what she's interested in. But if she were, she would have to call me and say, hey, I'm at the bar and I'm at this guy and I really want to have sex with him. And then I get to decide in that moment, is this something I'm comfortable with or not comfortable with? Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, and the same, we that is one guideline that we both have the same, because the reality is I'm more likely to do that than she is.
Yeah, and she's gonna, and you're gonna be like, how many times has it made you laugh in the last minute?
Exactly.
So, and then obviously I'm assuming that there's obvious communication about being safe and smart and all that stuff too.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, like there is no unprotected sex. There's but that's just common sense. That's just a smart thing to do in the world.
In
so
general,
if you're out having in general.
But I mean, it would be something that would have to be talked about, I would assume.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Greg and I are just taking notes. So,
all right. So, Dr. Chef quotes, a lot of people report having different kinds of desires for sex. Like, one person wants BDSM or kinky sex, and the other really doesn't. And that's hard to manufacture in a satisfying way. If your partner can find someone who is totally psyched for that, nobody has to have the kind of sex they don't want to have, and everybody gets to have the kind of sex they find fun and appealing.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
So,
makes sense.
There's a lot of advantages. Hey, Jen.
I want to be choked by Kevin.
Get in here.
No, he wants to choke me, I think.
I don't care who chokes what.
Number three, sometimes people just fall into the lifestyle. Chef said that unless a couple goes out in search of a third member, couples can find themselves falling into polyamory. Polyamory just happens to people, she said. Like, they find themselves falling in love with their best friend, get drunk one night, have an accidental threesome, and say, oh, wait, all three of us are in love. What is this? I haven't experienced that, but
yeah, I've never accidentally fallen into a threesome. Or guess what? You guys would know. Literally, I'd make t-shirts about it. I mean, it would be the first thing you learn about me.
You would call your mom, and she's like, Greg, I don't want to know this.
Yeah,
she's
this
like,
is terrible.
Mom, I fell into a threesome. Yeah.
Four, it involves a lot of communication, which I've talked about. So just talking with each other is a key in polyamory. In fact, because couples have to be so honest with each other about everything, many couples believe it has made them closer. And I will say for us, it actually has.
Yeah, it sounds like that's what we were talking about earlier. So, you guys might very well be broken up by now if you weren't so honest
probably,
about it, right?
Probably, yeah. You know, and that's the thing is like I get that this is not like quote unquote normal, right? Like I get this is outside of what people expect
and what a lot of people are comfortable with. Sure,
yeah, and a lot of people are comfortable with. You know, and I think one of the interesting things is like when you know like close people when I talk to them, I have had some instances where people it's kind of like they almost withdraw and immediately that you know they're just like, well, I'm not interested in that. And it's like I don't want to have sex with you. Like I'm not trying to get you to come into this. This is just like part of my life, and I love you, and I care about you, and so I want to know. I want you to know. Also, you may see me out one night with somebody that's not her, and I don't want you to be like, "What the fuck's happening?"
So I totally misunderstood this whole thing. I thought this entire episode was about you wanting to fuck me and Greg.
Yeah, John, it's not.
Well, I think every episode is about me wanting to fuck you and Greg, so I don't think that's...
Your foreplay sucks, by the way. The constant insults is no way to our hearts.
I'm trying to make you insecure and needy, so you...
It's working, but that's making me want to stay in my monogamous relationship.
Oh,
I don't think you need to help that. I think that's just there.
What, his insecurity?
And neediness.
That's true. Just so maybe like I should Kevin's just really insults. Lean into it instead of trying to like stoke it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Just let it happen. It'll be there.
Number five, it's not always easy. You know, because I will say it certainly requires some very complicated conversations.
Poor John having sex with multiple women. Oh, not always easy. Poor guy.
He's a trooper, you know, he's a warrior.
It's like, I suffer for my love. That's what I do. So
I can't believe how many erections I get.
It does sound exhausting, though. I'm too tired for this.
Well, it's
no. That's the funniest thing. I've
ever heard. There are definitely
for a lot of things we've talked about on this
there
podcast.
Definitely nights where I've gone on dates with like people, and you know, and it was, and it's kind of like, it's like exciting leading up to it, but then the night I'm actually going on the date, I'm like, oh fuck, I don't want to do this. I just want to stay home and watch Archer. Like, that seems so much easier. Yeah. Like, I got to go talk and ask questions and do stuff with my hands. I don't want to do that.
This is one of the reasons you get married, is so you don't have to do all that stuff.
You don't have to feign interest in somebody just to get in their pantaloonies.
So, kids, number six, kids don't complicate things as much as you might think.
That sounds really easy for someone without kids to say.
Well, no.
Or read.
This is Dr. Chef. This is not me. So according to Chef, polyamory can improve couples' relationships with their children if they have them, because they are already very good at communication. She said children don't usually have more than two parents. Any others who might be around are adult friends who are there for support, but they don't often take on disciplinary roles. The children are very clear on who their parents are. They're never confused by that, she said. That person is much more likely to be seen as an aunt or an uncle, extended family of somewhat, but not an actual parent, but certainly an adult who they can rely on and go to for help, support ideas, and maintain a lasting connection with. You know, because I mean, so basically, it's not like you're having sex in front of the kid, right? Like, your kids don't know what's happening, so it's just like, oh, there's just this guy. This is just our parents' friend.
It kind of makes me think about all my aunts and uncles, and I'm kind of wondering. Was that really my uncle?
Yeah, I could kind of see. Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. I could kind of see how
pop.
That just makes it super convenient for I don't know. I'm not a huge.
I think the kid.
That's
thing
someone
is,
that's a self fulfilling prophecy of anecdotal information.
Well, so we have another set of friends who have a child and they are polyamorous. But here's the thing, right? Again, it's like everybody is deciding what is going to happen and how that's going to look. So like they personally, their kid knows that they're polyamorous. Their kid knows that they're open. He's like a teenager now, so he knows that's happening. You know, but they don't ever bring anybody home. It's something that's like very separate from their life, but the reason
they don't see it in their day-to-day lives.
Right. Yeah. You know, and it was really fascinating because like he said to them when they asked, like, you know, he was just like, you know, he had concerns about their relationship and how's that going to affect him. And they, you know, and they had that conversation with him and they're like, you know, like, we're your parents and this is like, you know, something we're doing. And, you know, so like, we're never going to, you're always going to be our priority. And they do a really good job of that, you mm-hmm. know, but it's just the reason they told him is because it's like, why is mom not home tonight? You know, and they just decided they didn't want to be like, oh, well, you know, she's staying in her friend's house because he knows all of their friends.
Sounded like, right? They should have had this no sleepover rule. That would have helped.
That probably would help. So number seven, it doesn't always work. Chef tends to work with people who are happy in their polyamorous lives and so admits she is looking through rose-colored glasses at the situation. In bad polyamorous relationships, things may get complicated and messy. In fact, before meeting her wife, Chef's husband suggested polyamory to her. He wanted to find a bisexual woman for them to share, but she wouldn't be allowed to sleep with other men. In the end, Chef realized she was being manipulated, and that's not how healthy polyamorous relationships should go down.
So he was basically saying he wanted to bring a woman into the relationship?
Yeah, he basically wanted to have a threesome. Like, he basically, yeah, like, and that's the thing is, like, so that's...
Well, that's not really being polyamorous. I mean, that's just right, having a
threesome. That's, yeah, and that's... That, well, he wanted to have more than... He wanted to have a third... He wanted, basically, he wanted him and his wife and this other woman to always be having threesomes together, right? So it's like, you know, so... But that's not what she wanted.
Right, yeah.
You know, yeah. So the word polyamorous first appeared in an article by Morning Glory Zell Ravenheart, which is is this lady's name.
Her name is Morning Glory?
Her name is Morning Glory Zell Ravenheart. Zell hyphen Ravenheart.
Sounds like the perfect person to be writing about this.
It really does, man.
Hippie.
It's like, and this was in May 1990 in Green Egg magazine. And she, quote, polyamorous.
Green egg magazine.
Yeah, like the smoker?
Yeah, I guess so.
The big green eggs?
So Zell Ravenheart was asked by the editor of the Oxford English Dictionary to provide a definition of the term, and had provided it for the UK version as the practice, state, or ability of having more than one sexual loving relationship at the same time with the full knowledge and consent of all partners involved. So, and then the words polyamory, polyamorous, and polyamorous were added to the Oxford English Dictionary in 2006. So there's some like different types of polyamorous relationships. So there's something called a kitchen table polyamory, and that is basically where, so let's say, like kind of going back to where you started with all of us, like, so let's say the three of us plus our partners were all in like a relationship together, right? That would be so, and we would like, so we all know each other very well. It's like we're all dating each other's significant others. We all like have Thanksgiving together. We have parties together, you know. So it's like, in other words, it's like you're a very closed unit. It's also something, it's called a polycule, which is all of the people linked through their relationships, usually romantic and or sexual, to one or more members of a polyamorous group. So our poly, so I use this in a sentence, our polycule doubled in size when my spouse started seeing Boris Aducci, whose husband has six other partners.
Fantastic. So you said it was a kitchen table. Was it kitchen table?
It's a kitchen table polyamory. So it's
so
basically
is, so is
meaning
kitchen
like,
table polyamory the name of our Partridge Family cover band?
I play drums.
I'm gonna pretend like I'm playing guitar. I can't actually play guitar. I'm gonna grow my hair out and play like I'm playing.
I'm pretty sure they were pretending too.
Yeah. A parallel polyamory is a style in which members of individual relationships prefer not to meet or know details of their partner's other's relationships. So basically it's like, you know, Kevin is dating so-and-so and I'm dating so-and-so and we're dating each other and we're the primary partnership, but I don't want to know anything about this person. I can know about him, but I don't want to meet him and vice versa. So we both are having open relationships, but we never meet. And then there's solo poly, which is a style in which the individual has or is comfortable with having multiple intimate, remote, romantic, and sexual relationships without wanting to cohabitate or nest with another one partner. So what the woman that I am seeing or like going on dates with, like she, that is who she is. Like she is polyamorous, so she has multiple relationships, but none of them would be considered like this. Like none of them are cohabitating. None of them are like, you know, lifelong relationships. It's like she has.
She doesn't
ongoing.
Have one primary relationship.
Right, right. And she, and some of these people she's been dating for, you know, a couple of years, but it's like she's not looking to, she doesn't want a partner, like, mm-hmm. you know, to go through life with right now. And that
she's
could
like,
change.
She's like George Clooney was before he got married.
Yeah, exactly. So
exactly
it's also also known as George Clooney polyamory. So it's Clooney poly. I don't know. Cool poly.
Clooney.
So some of the values are, so a large percentage of polyamorous define fidelity not as sexual exclusivity, but as faithfulness to the promises and agreements made about a relationship, right? So polyamory sustains a vast variety of open relationship or multiple partner constellations, which can differ in definition and grades of intensity, closeness, and commitment. So when that word constellation, so basically what that means is, so let's say that me, right, and then I'm dating Susan, right? And then Susan has Tom, and then Tom is dating Eric, right? And then I also am dating Gail, and Gail is dating Susan. You know, so it's like basically if you like draw out how it kind of looks, it's like it's a constellation because you have multiple people who are involved. It could be. So that's, you know, I personally don't have a constellation. We right now have a square or whatever shape you can make with 4 points.
Sounds really, diamond? That sounds way too complicated the other way. I can't do the constellation thing. No way.
You know, and there is, and that's the thing. So there is, you know, like I said, there's no standard model to this. There's like no wrong way or right way to do it. The only right way to do it is being open and honest. That's right. The only requirement. But the rest of it is just everybody is like figuring it out for themselves. So
yeah, that makes sense.
In order for polyamory to work, you must have the following as a foundation. First and foremost, the partners must agree that you should be non-monogamous.
that's a good start. That's a real good start.
Yeah, you don't want a left turn.
No. The partners are feeling similarly powerful and autonomous in the relationship. Openness versus secrecy. Clarity and specificity of agreements versus confusion or vagueness. And Courtney and I have experienced that in the beginning where we, you know, we had a conversation and we thought we both kind of had the same like understanding, and then things happen where she got mad at me, I got mad at her, you know, and it was, and again, when you get, it's like, because it's not about what's happening, it's about the betrayal of the rules, right? Mm-hmm. And they're not really, and they don't really call them rules, they're guidelines because they are forever changing as you're navigating it.
It's right? Like the Constitution.
It is, but way, we have way easier and way more agreement. We're not as divided.
Yeah, you're trying to ratify a bunch of amendments.
Yeah.
And so, they just go right through.
And we have a no-gun policy, so we never take guns on dates.
It's a good policy.
That is only for, guns are only for our relationships. honoring keeping agreements versus violating them, and then how much partner views. How each partner views non-monogamy, right? So that was the, kind of the in the beginning where we both said we want to be non-monogamous, but like I didn't know what that meant for her, and she didn't know what that meant for me. So we went into our relationship both thinking we wanted the same thing.
It's a voyage of discovery.
It's a what?
A voyage of discovery.
It really is. Benefits of polyamory can include.
I'm sorry. No, it's just funny. The benefits include getting to fuck a lot of people. The end.
Increased chance of STIs. Yeah. The ability of individuals to discuss issues with multiple partners, potentially mediating and thus stabilizing a relationship and reducing polarization of viewpoints. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Emotional support and structure from other committed adults within the familiar unit. A wider range of adult experiences, skills, resources, and perspectives. So that part, I will say that both of us have discovered some things sexually that I don't know that we would have discovered with each other.
That's got to be an awkward conversation.
You creep. Hold on a second. I'm going to get comfortable. John. Just
hey, I tried this on my boyfriend. Here, come here.
Just tell me what you learned.
Well, it turns out, I never thought I would like this, but it turns out I actually like to get choked.
Damn, so, but you don't like to choke. Because you said you wouldn't choke Kevin.
And
it's because I'm too tall.
Yeah, it's like an awkward angle. It's a lower thing.
Just doesn't grab it, doesn't grabbing work. The step stool just kills the mood. So it's like it's all hot and heavy. And like, hold on.
Actually, I was more interested in what Courtney learned.
Well, that
you
is
know what?
You.
Get
that
her is, in here, John. We got to move on.
Yeah, that is for her to share. But the thing is like it's not something I like all the time. It has to be like it's a very specific kind of thing, right? So, boy, I feel really awkward right now.
Is it because we're both staring at you blankly?
Do you have a hard time breathing? Like, do you feel like your neck is being squeezed?
And Greg's masturbating. That's making me uncomfortable. So.
That is weird. That is weird.
I'm never not masturbating during this.
But what I don't like being slapped or I don't like any of that kind of stuff. I'm not into that stuff. All right.
Well,
so,
I don't like peanut butter.
I don't. Well, that's not true. I love peanut butter. It's fantastic. More emotional, intellectual, and sexual needs met as part of the understanding that one person cannot be expected to provide them all. Conversely, polyamory offers release from the monogamous expectation that one person must meet all of individuals' needs. Sex, emotional support, primary friendship, intellectual stimulus, compensation, social presentation, and so on. So the word that I was trying to think of, the opposite of jealousy, here it is, compersion.
I wonder why that didn't just come spring to mind.
Compersion is an empathetic state of happiness and joy experienced when another individual experiences
is
happiness.
Is banging your
joy.
Girlfriend.
Yes, that's, you know.
Are you sure that's compersion? It might be cuckoldy.
In the compression. Context of poly. It describes positive feelings experienced by an individual when their intimate partner is enjoying another relationship.
Multiple orgasms.
Greg.
So. I'm so glad you got those three orgasms that I could not provide you with.
Fuck you.
Hey, man, I'm not judging. I think it's wonderful that you're happy that there's other people that make her laugh more than you do.
And oh, Greg, come on.
All right, so it's so I do.
I'm just so you know, you make me laugh a fair amount, too.
Aww.
You make me laugh too, Jen.
You always make me laugh, John.
I am a little disappointed that you won't choke me, but I'll deal with that. As long as you make me laugh, we're still good.
I mean, I guess if we're laying down, but we can't be standing up. It just can't be a stand-up thing. Right? It's like
I'll choke both you guys.
Okay. I just could go off the rails real fast.
Here's like some studies, some facts, blah, blah, blah. So there was in the 1800s, there was a Christian commune. Called the Oneida community, and they believed strongly in a system of free love known as complex marriage, where any member was free to have sex with any other who consented. Possessiveness and exclusive relationships were frowned upon. Hmm. So, you know, there were people polyamorous in the 1800s. I'm sure they were a very small sect. So this is... So this is kind of getting into religion. or not kind of, it is. This is kind of getting into how religion views this. So some people consider themselves Christian and polyamorous, but mainstream Christianity does not accept polyamory.
Shocker.
I know, right? In 2017, the Council on Biblical Manhood and Womanhood released a manifesto on human sexuality known as the Nashville Statement. So the statement was signed by 150 evangelical leaders and includes 14 points of belief. I'm not going to go through all of them, but among other things, it states, "We deny that God has designed marriage to be a homosexual, polygamous, or polyamorous relationship." And I do that in an accent like that because, of course, they sound like that. The Church of Satan, or the, what is it? It's not the church. It's the, what is it? Oh, yeah, no, it is the Church of Satan.
That's okay, good.
The Church of Satan.
Don't screw that one up.
considers Abrahamic or sexual morals to be narrow, restrictive, and hypercritical. Satanists are pluralists, accepting polyamorous, bisexuals, lesbians, gays, BDSM, transgender people, and asexuals. Sex is viewed as an indulgence, but one that should only be freely entered into with consent.
Pretty open-minded for Satanists.
I also think it's kind of like, they said they included asexual people in there. Those people are just like, hey, man, I don't want to do anything. Is that but such they, but a they bad want, thing? But they do
now want, I'm a Satanist?
Now
but
I'm a
they
Satanist
want relationships. They do want relationships, asexuals.
Yeah, but I mean,
they just don't want to have sex with each other.
Well, why is the church should be thrilled about asexuals? That's all they want is for people to, never mind.
But then in the church, they're not going to procreate. So,
and create more people to give them money.
Right,
Okay, now I get it.
The 11 satanic rules of the earth only give two instructions regarding sex.
Aussie.
Do not make... Huh?
No.
I mean, honestly, it's like after I went, I'm just like, you know what? I could kind of get in the Church of Satan. I mean, I'm not going to because, again, we know that I don't commit to things. So
that's true.
But do not make sexual advances unless you are given the mating signal. I'm not real sure how you know what that is. and do not harm little children. I mean, you know.
It's good.
That's
good
a
rule.
Good rule.
It's good rules, right? So, tying this all in, you know, and I mean, because I've got more, but I think it's time to kind of wrap it up because it's running long. I think, like, when I was started this, I was just thinking of, like, how relationships have changed throughout time. And it seems like we have kind of gone in this pattern of, because if you go back to like Greece, you know, like around before Christ or at the time of Christ, they were pretty open to what they could do. And then as time went on, it like, you know, homosexuality became a sin, like all these things kind of went away. And so now I kind of feel like we're having this resurgence because did I say it's like basically, did I say the part where like 1 in 5 people in America at some point in their adult lives have been involved in a polyamorous or open relationship? Did I say that?
No, I don't remember.
No, I don't think so. I
skipped that part. Yeah. So, and it was one of the interesting things was if you break that down by gay, straight, lesbian, you know, it was like gay men, like 64% of gay men have had open relationships or, you know, polyamory or something in that. And it was like maybe 10% of straight couples, and then lesbians were about 16% or something like that. So that was kind of fascinating. I did skip that. But, you know, I feel like we are, I feel like this may be one place, and again, we'll see what happens with the country and, you know, what the hell's going on in the world. But it feels like this is getting more and more acceptable, right? And not necessarily polyamory, but it seems like when it comes to people's adult consensual relationships, I feel like, and you know I'm never positive, I feel like this is one thing that I've talked about where this is actually, people are just getting, like, people just don't give it, like, they just don't have time to care, right? People just, like, whatever you do is whatever you do, and they don't need to know, and I especially think the younger you are, the more that's your view, right? That is what I'm experiencing, so I actually think this is one time where history doesn't defeat itself, but what do you guys think?
I would disagree with you slightly only in the fact that you're saying that people don't have time to care, because people seem to have a lot of time to care about a lot of things if you go on Facebook. But
that's true.
I think it's great that because at the end of the day, I mean, we need to stop caring what other people do in their relationships because it does not fucking matter. And anything that anybody has as far as a rule or a way it should be is 99.9% of the time rooted in religion. And it's not fair because your religion and your morality or your beliefs, and I don't even like using the word morality because morality is a personal thing. But I don't like that you know, people like to push their beliefs on other people in any facet of life. And I think, hey, if you know what you got, what you and Courtney are doing, if it works for both of you, then that's healthy. You know, the fact that like you could have another, you know, someone, you know, look at your relationship and say, well, that's unhealthy. It's like, well, why is it unhealthy? Well, because that's not how it's supposed to be. It's like, well,
right.
Just because it's not healthy for you doesn't mean it's not healthy for them. You know, sometimes being in a committed relationship is for some people is not healthy. I mean, how many people who claim to be like devout Christians, Catholics, whatever, have been divorced 7 times? You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like, hey, find what works for you. As long as you're open, just like what you talked about, you communicate, you're open with each other, you understand, you trust the other person to do the right thing and make sure that they understand what, you know, I know you don't like to use the word rules, guidelines, whatever, just to make sure that you're both on the same page and you're not hurting anybody, then hey, man, I think it's awesome. And so in that sense, I do agree with you that I think history did not defeat itself because I think we are getting to a point where more people are feeling that way about relationships. Maybe not everybody, but I think enough people where it's like, hey, this is fine. This is okay. There's nothing wrong with it.
Right. And yeah. And I guess, and Greg, I definitely want to hear what you have to say, but I'd like to add, maybe what I meant to say was that it's yes, people definitely judge shit still. But what is really fascinating about this seems to be, because Courtney and I are in this world, this is a world that is ever expanding and growing. Like more and more people every day are starting to try this and see if it works for them. Right. And again, I do not think this is for everybody.
No.
Right.
Like, but a lot of people are not very good at monogamous relationships, and maybe they, maybe this is something they should consider, you know?
Yeah.
Seriously.
Well, I think that, just as a summary from what we discussed is that like, if you're involved in a relationship with like this, that's foundation is based on honesty and communication. I mean, how could you go wrong with
exactly,
that? Right.
Yeah.
So kind of dovetailing on what Kevin said, if you're concerned and it's kind of fascinating because I feel like everybody has an opinion about every different type of relationship there is, right? Like any kind of match, homosexuality, you know, bisexuality, and then all these different variety of relationships there are, because it, at the end of the day, they're probably questioning whether the one I've chosen, the path I've taken, is actually the right one for me. So it kind of, you kind of have strong opinions because you're like, oh, that would never work for me, because it kind of threatens like what your relationship is and what your real thoughts are about it. So like, I've often thought that people that were admittedly homosexuals and out, I had respect for it because they were being honest with their sexuality. And if you're in this polyamorous relationship, then you're being honest with your sexuality. So it should be applauded, right, to do something like that. As to the question of it being socially acceptable, I think it is a social construct and they're kind of changing. We don't have to get married anymore because we're working on a farm and you need different people in your little family to take on different roles, whether you're the bread earner or like the hunter, or whether you're the farmer or the person that takes care of the house. You know, there's a lot more options out there, and with sexual equality comes these, you know, these avenues to experience and see what's right for you. So that's all really good. As far as your question goes, whether it's acceptable to our society and becoming more such, I think it is among like-minded people. But there is a huge portion of the country that are going to vote for Trump that probably aren't so open-minded to it. And be it, you know, their religious dogma, you know, the way they were born, all of these things, it threatens like how they think. Just like, you know, you always find out the people that are like super homophobic are the ones that are probably repressing their own sexuality,
right,
of being homosexual. So,
and you could probably make that same analogy in this situation too. It's people that are repressed and maybe jealous.
Yeah, I just think that people that are like-minded kind of hang out with each other, and that's how we form friendships and bonds and stuff. So, of course, none of the three of us are going to have any negative thoughts about it. The way you present it, it's almost impossible to come up with a negative reason for it. If you're being honest and it's true and it's that's the best thing you can possibly do.
Plus, this gives us a chance to finally be together.
Yeah, that's right.
Were we ever not going to be, though, really?
You're probably right.
It's tough to deprive that, the world of that.
Well, thank you both. Thank you, John. That was awesome. I had a great time chatting with you guys about this. And Thanks to everybody who listened, and we'll see you guys in a couple of weeks. That's all I got. Take care, everybody.
So long.